This meeting is now being recorded.
All right. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 2 Legal Regulatory Issues Call held on the 21st of November, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? And I have Jeff Newman noted. Okay, and hearing no more names, I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes. And please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. And with this, I'll turn it back over to Michael Fleming. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this week's first Work 2 Track call following ICANN Abu Dhabi. We will be having a longer agenda than usual. However, there are some certain items that we need to work through. Could I get sync control to the slides, please? Thank you. I'm assuming that's unsynced for everyone. So if you could join me on slide 2 for the agenda. This week we'll be doing our regular SOI updates, and then we'll be appointing our second co-chair for Work Track 2. Then we'll be looking at the schedule for our plan forward in order to deliver plenary reports or a plenary input for the initial report for the full working group. And then we'll be doing discussion, recap, and questions in CC2 comments of vertical integration. So with that, I'd like to move towards slide 3, the appointment of co-chair. As many of you know, Phil Buckingham stepped down previously, leaving an open spot on this team, and therefore we had a period of for nominations and volunteers step forward, and this was held from October 31st to November 10th. There was a bit of overlap with ICANN 60, but at the same time, this was an opportunity for us to speak with people directly at that time that had interest, and out of that, Sophia Feng kindly volunteered, and after a discussion with Sophia and learning more about her experience and within the new GTLD program overall, it is the recommendation of this leadership team that we appoint Sophia as co-chair. Now, I want to make sure that everyone knows that Sophia's SOI is at this link. If you go there, you can see a very nice picture as compared to mine, so you can get a good idea what Sophia looks like. But I wanted to make sure that we're all on the same page here, so I'm going to first pause for a moment to ask if anyone has any input in regards to Sophia's appointment, and then I'll turn it over to Sophia for an introduction. So does anyone have anything to say about Sophia's appointment? Hearing none, I will ask Sophia to make an appointment, to make an introduction. Tell us a little bit about herself.
Hi. Thank you, Michael. And hi, everyone. Sophia Fan. Can you hear me clearly?
Clear.
Okay. All right. Hi, everyone. This is Sophia, and I'm work for ZNS, which is the backend registry operator service provider in Beijing. And I participated in ICOM since 2011, and also actually participated in the first round new GTD application processes and related policies discussions after the first round applicants being approved. And it's really a pleasure and also honor for me to be here and introduce myself and also being able to participate as a co-chair in this working group. And I really appreciate this opportunity to work with you, and I hope I'd be able to contribute as much as possible and helping Michael's and working with you to move these work groups progress forward. So here I am, and it's my first call in this as co-chair in this working group. So thank you, and let's get work started.
Thank you, Sophia. So with that, I will also ask if anyone has any. Just while everyone knows, while we're taking the opportunity to appoint Sophia in somewhat of a formal manner, I do wish to highlight that the appointment of co-chairs within subgroups of PDPs isn't necessarily meant to be a formal process. This can be done in a manner that co-chairs of the full working group see fit. However, we wanted to treat it as similar as possible. And noting that we have gone through these formal process right here, I just wish to ask if anyone has anything to say about Sophia's appointment again, or I guess the question I'm asking is if there's any opposition, but I don't see that as being an issue. Still, let me ask if anyone does have any opposition. And hearing none or seeing nothing in the chat, I just wish to welcome Sophia as co-chair of the Work Track 2 and look forward to working with her as well. She is based in China, so you're going to see a change in the roster, in the lineup of calls in the future. We're going to be doing a better rotation of calls. This is for her sake and my sake, both of us being based in the APAC. I think it's a great step forward for us out of the APAC, but also a call better to suit us outside of 5 a.m. and 6 a.m. would be you'll see much better performance out of both of us. So now that we have her working with me, I would like to move forward a little bit to our next agenda item. Schedule. You might want to enlarge this on your screen if your computer is as small as mine. So next we wanted to talk about the schedule for the upcoming few months that we have here. So many of you were probably in the last full working group call, but we have outlined a schedule for how we can deliver the final, not only the final report, but the interim report within March, and then look to have that published for public comment around April. Now, it is the objective of this working track, too, in order to provide deliberations on legal regulatory issues, and we do have quite a bit of them. And moving forward with that, I have looked at our total call schedule for the next few months and have outlined the necessary steps that we have to get through in order to make that deadline. I'll briefly go through it, but I would like to ask if anyone sees this as a realistic schedule. I know it's going to be very difficult with especially how much material we do have, but we can see to make adjustments where necessary. And as adjustments, I mean perhaps longer calls or more calls. I already will talk about that for February. But all the same, through November 21st and till December 7th, we are a little bit behind other working tracks, and we have CC2 comments we still need to get through for vertical integration, TLD rollout, and contractual compliance. This is technically our second pass, and I'd rather not skip it as much as possible. And then from December 21st until January 25th, we'll be going through what are called deliberations. Now, I think there's a good question to ask when we talk about deliberations. What do they look like? What will the format be for deliberations for at least this working track? And to answer that, there really is no decided format for that. In our last leadership call, we did kind of have a little bit of discussion on that, and we're looking to see if staff might be able to put some kind of template together, but there doesn't have to be an exact format to what deliberations look like. Deliberations should fully outline the issue and the discussions that we've had and provide a path forward or perhaps consensus if we do have consensus on the issue at the time. Now, I want to spend these three meetings in order to discuss where we are at and where we see ourselves for that plenary report. Upon that discussion within each of those meetings, where we discuss three meetings each, so you're looking at talking about topics like the base registry agreement, reserve names, and registrant protections through each through 1 hour. So that might be a little bit difficult, but still, let's ask ourselves if this is realistic. If not, we do need to make adjustments. And then once we have that call for deliberations, there will be a bit of background work where staff and leadership will work together to kind of outline and pin something down. So when it comes around to be February, we'll present what we have written down as a deliberation to this whole working track and ask for consensus on that item, on that deliberation, if that's what we can submit as our current finding to the full working group. And our due date for presenting or at least having those proposals over to the full working group will be March 9th. So for February, I have added one additional call, and that will be on the 15th, or at least sometime around that. And I've added that because we've only had two calls in February, and I just didn't think that it was possible for us to get consensus on deliberations, ask if there are any objections on the deliberations within two meetings. So are there any questions on this schedule and what we're supposed to be doing here? Please go ahead.
Sorry, did you call? It's Alan. Did you call on me?
Alan.
Yeah. Okay.
You have the floor, and then Kurt does.
I'm a little bit confused, I guess, because the term deliberations normally means, you know, discussions, not necessarily coming to conclusions, and you're using it here as, you know, that within these calls we are going to essentially discuss what the various options are and come to a conclusion. And you know, ignoring the use of the terminology, I don't see how we can do that in a single call, you know, on three different subjects. I don't think we've laid out the options well enough at this point to be able to make those kind of decisions in the time frame we're talking about here.
So thank you, Alan. And I just want to address that. My apologies if I might be kind of interpreting or using the term terminology on deliberations incorrectly. For the deliberations, at least for what we present in the plenary, we do not need to have a conclusion on the topic. Deliberations will, a better term would be to deliberate further on what our proposal to the full working group can be. And I want to come to an agreement on the discussion points, which will focus around what the issue is, what we have talked about, and where we see ourselves for a path forward. Now, if we have consensus on the resolution, that's great. But we need to reach consensus on those three factors. If we don't have a path forward for the issue at hand, if we merely say that we need more time to discuss for a path forward, that's fine. But we need to have consensus on what will be written in those proposals to the full working group. Does that help or clarify the issue?
Well, it's Alan. That proposal implies we've made some decisions, or at least tentative decisions, and I'm not sure I see the path from where we are today in the time allowed to do that in each of these subjects. And I'm expressing my concern that the time frame, given that, I think is somewhat unrealistic. Thank you.
I'm in somewhat agreement, Alan. That's why I'm looking to see if we can't make any changes. I'll let Kurt go, and then I'll kind of further discuss that point. So, Kurt, feel free to go ahead.
Yep, thanks. So my point is similar, that there's 12 issues listed here, and if we're into February and we're having three calls to sort of get some sort of finalized document or 12 issues, that's, you know, not much time per issue, you know, about 15 minutes. So if we're hoping to come close, I think that we have to come out of each one of these calls, like today's call, vertical integration, we have to come out of this call with some sort of written sense of the group that has to follow right after this call, so that there's some sort of straw man document. And maybe for the following calls, we roll into the call with a straw man document that where you've compiled, and Sophia and with the help of others, you know, what is the sense of the group on this, so that there's, you know, pretty good written input going into the calls, and then a pretty good document coming out of each one of the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 calls on each of these issues. So that means, you know, quite a bit of work before and after. But I, along with everybody else, I've sat through many, many of these calls where there's been robust discussion, and at the end, everybody goes, boy, that was a great call. But in fact, at the end, there's no written output or a sense of the group or anything like that. So if you want to come close, and I'm thinking it's an impossible, you know, it's an impossible land too. We really need to come out of each one. You know, we're going to talk about vertical integration once today, and that's the only bite we get until we try to get some better form of consensus on these February calls. So we have to come out of it with, here's the sense of the group on vertical integration. And next call, you know, here's the sense of the group on TLD rollout and contractual compliance, you know, whatever that entails.
Thank you, Kurt. I think that's a great suggestion and good input. So right now we have a kind of a summaries document that's been shared with this group on multiple occasions that looks at summarizing the issue and what we've spoken about today and how we might see a path forward. Unfortunately, when you look at that document, some of the issues seem like we haven't talked about anything really. And with these calls, because we have so many topics and the time it takes to introduce them and to even come to initial questions, it's more so a review of the topic at hand, and we need 2 or 3 calls to come to any some sort of development of discussion for where we are at. So I can definitely agree that having that initial document down of where we're at right now and how we can move forward will be very helpful, and I think we'll endeavor to have something for each of these deliberation marked calls. Kurt, you do have your, unless you have, if you'd like to reply to that, please go ahead. No? Okay, I'll let Jeff go ahead then. Make sure you drive safe, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks. I know this is an ambitious schedule, and I completely understand there are some people that don't believe that we can do this. I am trying to be an optimist in this one, and I do think that if we're going to make this schedule, we absolutely need to continue discussions online. We need to have more written documents, and we can't expect that all deliberations will take place on phone calls. So that's just not, that's the way we've been operating, and if we keep that going, we'll never get to a point where anything gets done. That said, I do think that there have been enough calls on a lot of these subjects where we can thoroughly lay out the options, discuss the pros and cons on most of the options, and then, you know, if there is a tendency to lean towards a solution, we can, you know, we'll indicate that. But there may not be tendencies to lean towards solutions on all of these or on most of these things. So, you know, the preliminary report does not have to suggest conclusions definitively. It could be a series of options, pros and cons, and then ask very pointed questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. And exactly, we need to start turning to the, we need to use the mailing list and Google Docs as much as possible as well. So I've seen that there's a bit of concern with the topics, and I think we can, with the time frame that we have for getting all this done, but with suggestions from Kurt and Jeff on how we can approach that and use different tools and have better documentation ready for discussion, we will endeavor to do that with staff. And Ellen, you have your hand up. Just let me finish my sentence, and we'll move forward with this schedule. But Alan, go ahead if you have any input.
Thank you. It's Alan Greenberg. I just wanted to respond to Jeff. If our target is, in fact, something closer to what Jeff just ended with, that is, a viable set of options and questions to ask in the preliminary report, that may be doable. And that's a very different thing from making recommendations that we feel comfortable are the right answer going forward. So I just wanted to be clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. And if we have the recommendations going forward, now, I think we've, for some of the issues that we've discussed, in fact, a good majority of them, when we went through those issues and we asked if there were with thoughts that differentiated, we had a good path forward for a lot of that. But I let's just lay that out and then present that to the group and to see if where we're at in that direction. But other than that, let's move on to today's the topic of today's call. And thank you for your time on the schedule. Now, we are on slide five. Vertical integration, where are we at now? So in the past, we had two previous calls on vertical integration, and we talked about the history of switching from registry, a standard of registry-registrar separation, to vertical integration. It was really fast, but it was implemented for the 2012 new GTLD program. And we also looked at how there were proposed potential benefits and harms at the time. And then we reviewed mechanisms that were introduced into the registry agreement in the form of code of conduct and section 2.9 of the registry agreement in order to deter any abusive activities or potential harms as we saw it. Now, there are exceptions to the code of conduct in form of specification 13 and exemption, and it exempts registries where it is not necessary to protect the global public interest, and they have to fulfill two or three other criteria as well. Now, we are not here to reverse vertical integration. That's been said a number of times. But we are looking to explore whether or not mechanisms introduced to deter potential harms has been sufficient or if adjustments are necessary. Now, in order to do that, we look to see if there was evidence of that harm, and our best material for that was in the form of complaints, or at least looking at data from ICANN compliance. Now, in our last call, we had received very important data from ICANN compliance, and our resolution to what we received was that we needed more data in order to have any room to discuss how we can make recommendations. Now, if you join me on slide 6, the highlights of the data request and the result were that, first of all, vertical integration complaints deal with Registry Agreement Section 2.9 and the Code of Conduct, as well as for registries. So if the complaint has to deal with both the Code of Conduct and Section 2.9 in order to be marked as a vertical integration complaint. Now, for registrars, they can also receive a complaint about vertical integration as well, but it has to deal with Section 3.21 of the RAA. And for everyone's information, Section 2.9 of the Registry Agreement talks about discrimination, being fair and not discriminating against registrars that a registry has signed an RRA with. And the Code of Conduct, of course, looks at several criteria for registrars to follow that do own a registrar. They need to make sure the books are different. They need to not show preferential treatment. They need to not use the back-end data to their advantage in basically reserving specific names. There's a lot of material in there, but I'm not going to quote it from memory right now. Now, the RAA Section 3.21 looks at some of the requirements that registrars are need to follow when they are owned by a registry, or when they're vertically integrated. Now, so far the complaints that ICANN received in regards to vertical integration have been limited to registry operators. And surprisingly, ICANN has processed only 10 complaints dealing with 2.9 and the Code of Conduct. And we, on our last call, we basically found this to be somewhat lacking in data, and we proposed several questions forward in order to get a better idea of what this data actually means. Now, some of these questions came directly from proposals from individuals in our last call that we talked about vertical integration, so I will try to interpret them as best as I can, and I wish to ask if some of these might be seen as unnecessary or make better wording suggestions, and if not, can we go forward with these? Now, first of all, we are technically waiting on more a reply back from ICANN compliance on how many vertically integrated registries there are, so that is a given we will be asking. But one of the questions asked out of that was, out of that number, how many operate multiple TLDs? I think the original wording for this was, out of that number, how many are owned by the same corporate family? However, after looking at this and discussing with a few other individuals in the leadership team, it was a bit difficult to understand. So I think this is what the question seeks to ask when it asks if registry operators are owned by the same corporate family, but how many operate multiple TLDs? And then the third question looks at how many complaints were there against our registry operators overall. And this is outside of the vertical integration. We want to know in total how many complaints have been received against registry operators. I think this is in order to gauge or how many of that, what percentage deal with vertical integration. Now, Question 4 looks at, of the complaints referenced in the 1.B answer, and this is specifically highlighting the document, but that's mainly the 10 complaints that dealt with vertical integration. How many ROs were those complaints against? So basically asking, of the 10 complaints, how many of registry operators were there specifically? Here we're trying to look at whether or not one registry operator might have received more than one complaint. Now, there was also data in there that said that complaints that are received in regards to Section 2.9 of the Registry Agreement are highlighted in other category. If we want to dig those out, we can, but that we're getting a little bit outside of the vertical integration, so I would seek that we stay within these 10 complaints. And then the fifth question is, how many of those ROs own more than one TLD or multiple TLDs? Again, we're trying to summarize from all of the ROs that are vertically integrated that own more than one TLD, of the complaints received, how many of them operate more than one TLD? And then our last question 6, is how many of those registry operators were required to perform some kind of remediation, regardless if they were found to be a breach or not? Now, another highlight of the data that we received was that no registry operator has been found to be in breach of the registry agreement, and all of them had been able to demonstrate compliance with the registry agreement in regards to vertical integration. Does anyone have any suggestions on these questions, or are they in a good format that we can send over to ICANN compliance for further data? Hearing none, I think we'll go ahead and move that on over to sending that audit reports, GDD. So, yes, Kathy, in regards to the audit reports, this data also reflects, we received feedback in regards to audit reports as well. ICANN continues to perform audits in regards to the compliance of the registry, but out of that, I'm just trying to think from memory. I don't think that there was a substantive finding of incompliant registry operators, but I will check on that, and if my interpretation of that was wrong, I'll make sure to highlight and throw that on over the mailing list. But I don't think that there was enough in there to say that we needed to follow up on data in regards to that. So it's actually ICANN compliance that does the audit reports. And yes, ICANN compliance posts statistical data on their audit reports. They're not going to provide data of a specific registry operator per se, but that data is accessible. There's a link for it. Let me share that with you over the call or after the call. So we'll try to wordsmith these a bit better and send those on over to compliance. Okay, so CC2 comments. Now, we do have only 23 minutes left, but I'm going to get through these as much as possible. So the goal of CC2 comments here is basically, it's our second pass to the topics. Sorry, you can join me on slide 7 right now. And the goal of CC2 comment review is to basically provide further feedback to review the feedback that we receive from the community and discuss this input and also discuss the material of the topic. Now, further questions may need to be made to commentators in order to receive clarification. But here we're discussing as a group what their responses are and how they contribute to the overall topic itself. Moving on to slide 8, our first question was 2.6.1. The working group has not yet deliberated the issues of registrar non-discrimination or registrar separation, also known as vertical integration. My two cents, just keep in mind at this time when we asked the question, it was right before we had our first call. We've had two calls now, so we have deliberated a little bit. However, now that we have several years of operations of vertically integrated registries and registrars, what issues, if any, have you noticed with vertically integrated registries? Moving on to the next page. So we did receive response from Nominet, BRG, and Register Stakeholder Group on this. And overall, their response was that we have not seen or identified any issues. The RY's sample from this was that the Registry Stakeholder Group says, given the diversity of members within the Registry Stakeholder Group, there's not one single view on the question of vertical integration of registries and registrars. Some Registry Stakeholder Group members favor vertical integration and would support removal of the restriction on operation of those vertically integrated businesses. Excuse me. If other Registry Stakeholder Group members favor the retention on those restrictions, others do favor the restrictions. We are not aware of any specific disadvantages or issues arising out of the operation of vertically integrated registries and registrars. However, see our response to 2.6.3 as well. So with this, this is our only input on this question. Would anyone like to comment on whether or not there are issues on vertical integration? Has anyone seen any issues? Have they experienced firsthand? This is the time to talk about this. We haven't, compliance only gave us 10 complaints, and it seems to be a significantly small number in the past 4 years. But here we are, and this is the time to talk about it. I don't hear any, and an aspect of that is that, you know, we could always come back to this and say that we don't have, there aren't any issues, and we can keep vertical integration as is without introducing new mechanisms. But that would be the status quo if we don't have enough input in regard in order to make those changes. Kathy, you had the point on that the audit reports don't appear to address vertical integration. So the code of conduct in the registry agreement requires vertically integrated entities to perform an audit or a self-audit, as Jeff has stated, once a year. That basically said, it is a self-certification form. So I'm not sure if that the audit reports on behalf of HICAN compliance go deeply into the whether or not an entity is vertically integrated and whether or not they've just received the self-certification report. That might be a good question to ask HICAN compliance as well. I think what would be good is if I shared with you the link to the initial reply that we received back from ICANN. And if you'd like to ask any further questions on that, please feel free to let me know. Jeff, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. Just a couple things. Number one is the reason we're asking compliance the additional questions is because the audits that they do are only asking for self-certification. So if that's all the team that's doing the audits has done, then we want to see if there's other information that may have been received. So that's why we're asking the additional questions. Vertical integration is a topic that encompasses a lot of subtopics, and I think one of those it covers like non-discrimination, and so any issues, just because there's not a lot of comment on the overall subject of vertical integration, once you get into kind of the subtopics that are related, like pricing or things like, some registries have complained about where they are on registrars' shelves and stuff like that, you might get some more information. I'm not sure that there's, like you, I haven't seen too much interest from the community in a wholesale change of vertical integration and not allowing it. But as we get into more details, there may be little bits here and there that do require us to address. So I think some of these other questions might get more into it. Thanks.
Jeff, and I was just about to move towards those. So let's do that. Great transition. So our second question looked at Specification 13. Specification 13 grants an exception to the Registry Code of Conduct, Specification 9 in the Registry Agreement, and specifically vertical integration restrictions. Now, in addition, registry operators may seek an exemption from the Code of Conduct. And if the TLD is not a generic term and if it meets three other specified criteria set forth in Specification 9 of the Registry Agreement. So are there any other circumstances where exemptions to the Code of Conduct should be granted? Now, we did get a lot of input here, and yes, Cheryl, thank you very much. We are on slide 11 as of now. So, Nominate, Affilius, Registry Stakeholder Group, Brand Registry Group, and Valid Days did not identify any other circumstances where exemptions should not be granted. This is a shared comment between the Registry Stakeholder Group, BRG, and Valid Days, but the Registry Stakeholder Group does support the existing exceptions the Code of Conduct provided for under Specification 13 and under Specification 9, Paragraph 6. We have not identified any other specific circumstances where an exemption to the Code of Conduct should be granted. Now, the BC supported exemptions where the registry operator can demonstrate that the term comprising the TLD string directly corresponds to a product name of the registry operator. The BC would support granting an exemption to the Code of Conduct in a situation where the registry operator can demonstrate that the term comprising the TLD string directly corresponds to a product name of the registry operator. The registry operator should additionally be able to affirm that all uses of TLD will be in connection with such product and all domain name registrations in the TLD of the registry operator for its exclusive use, and application of the registry operator code of conduct to the TLD is not necessary to protect the public interest. I'm going to raise my own hand on this because I think we need further clarification on what exactly the product name, they mean by product name. I think a good question to ask is, are they talking about a branded topic name that doesn't necessarily have a trademark to it? Or are they talking about a generic name that could be identified as a product? So if you say you are, say that you're a company and you sell printers, okay, you can have .printer as a TLD, and you can run this with an exemption to the Code of Conduct. Is that what they're asking? I'm thinking the same as you, Jeff, that it's non-trademark products, but it's a bit vague on that. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, Yeah, so just thanks. I see this, maybe an example of this being like Microsoft.Office, you know, where they already can get code of conduct exemptions, but there may be other scenarios that are non-branded products that aren't the same as closed generics for which they want to operate in a closed way. So it's not a generic term, but it's a term that they use that may not be trademarkable for whatever reason, or maybe after the trademark date in which you could qualify. So to be in the trademark clearinghouse, and someone could correct me if I'm wrong, but you had to have a trademark prior to a certain date. And then in order to have a Spec 13, you had to have a trademark by a certain date. So now the question is, well, what do you do if you have a mark that's maybe pending application or something like that? You know, is that a way to add this on as an exemption? Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. And I am in a bit of agreement with you on what that probably means, and Susan as well. I don't think they're seeking to have generic terms that can be, product names that can be interpreted as generic terms, for example, as a code of conduct exempt. And as far as the requirements for Specification 13, you are spot on. Most of them, I believe. But, good. Does anyone have any other input in regards to this, or is anyone from the BC that could provide additional input here? Hearing none, let's move on. In the interest of time, I'd like to ask if I could just read the highlight, rather than reading the excerpt itself, read the summarized idea. When we talk about the deliberations for the vertical integration, we'll make sure to refer to the full text, of course, for how we move forward. But I don't see anybody disagreeing with me, so I'm just going to read the summarized idea then. Jeff, you still have your hand up the way. Registry stakeholder group, the BRG and Validatus, supported greater flexibility for registry operators wishing to seek an exemption and stated that existing process of obtaining an exemption to the Code of Conduct results in some ambiguity under the registry agreement. So the highlighted portions are that registry stakeholder group supports greater flexibility for registry operator wishing to seek an exemption, and that existing process of obtaining an exemption to the Code of Conduct results in ambiguity under the registry agreement, since the registry operator is still bound by Section 2.9. Now, since that under the current model, all exemptions must be for single registry models, wherein the registry as registrant may still choose its registrar, we do not believe this language should apply to Specification 9 exempt CLPs, regardless of whether they additionally qualify for Specification 13. This gets into our third question, which is a good transition. So let's discuss it there. So, Question 2.6.3. Some have argued that although we allow registries to serve as both as a registry and as registrar. Alan, I think you're on audio. I'm going to mute yourself. The rules contained within Section 2.9 of the Registry Agreement and in the Code of Conduct prohibit the integrated registrar from achieving the economic efficiencies of such integration by not allowing the registry to discriminate in favor of its own registrar. Do those arguments have merit? If yes, what can be done to address those claimed inefficiencies? If not, please explain what safeguards might be required. Now, Sophia and I made a very interesting hot. We came to a very good point when we were reviewing these together. But one aspect of what this question is asking is whether or not do we need Section 2.9. Now, in Section 2.9 of the Registry Agreement, it basically is the defining principle saying that registry has to use an ICANN accredited registrar. Now, with that in place, that basically, if you get rid of Section 2.9, then you can beg the question of whether or not a registry operator needs to use a registrar at all. Now, when we look at the responses here, a lot of them answer the question with that in mind of not having a registrar in place for a registry to run its TLD or, sorry, for Code of Conduct Exempt Specification 13 registries to not have to go through a registrar to register names. But is this really what this question is asking? Is it not, it looks like it's just dealing with the such with registrar discrimination. But are we looking to fully integrate, as it interprets, to not have registrars in the model for registries? Jeff, go ahead and answer. Go ahead and respond.
Yeah, so this question was intended to ask the question. Before we decided on the vertical integration issue, there were a number of economic papers that were submitted, and I'm sure Kurt remembers this too. Those economic papers all said that in order to achieve economies of scale and the full efficiencies of vertical integration, then things like allowing discrimination between registrars was something that would help achieve those efficiencies. But by allowing registries and registrars to be integrated, but at the same time not allowing them to favor their own registrar with more favorable terms and conditions, you are essentially cutting off their legs and not taking advantage of those efficiencies. And so it was meant to ask the question, going back to those papers, you know, has our artificial, and by artificial I'm not saying bad, but has our artificial imposition of limits actually prevented vertically integrated registries from achieving the efficiencies and the benefits of vertical integration that were described in those previous papers that we'll probably have to pull out again. So that's what it intended to ask. And it was more for non-brand and open registries than it was for closed brand registries.
Thank you, Jeff. I think we got the gist of what you were saying. You cut it in a little bit out. But let's go ahead and go through these answers as quickly as possible. So Nominate supports allowing full integration for dot brand registries. Their statement's short, so I'll read it, but new GTLD dot brand registries where there are non-group customers, where no non-group customer exists should be allowed for full integration. They don't make any comment at all for TLD for vertical integration, but, so again, the question, what is full integration here, and does that look to seek remove 2.9 completely. But then Janice Gow supported allowing full integration for dot brand registries and any single registrant TLD. So dot brand spec 13 and any single registrant TLD exemptions to the code of conduct should be allowed to register without using a registrar. And otherwise keep vertical into separation. It is tedious for some, but still it is a good reminder regulating for non-discrimination of registrars. The BRG and are what the brand registry group, the registry stakeholder group, suggested that PDP examine whether there remains any consumer protection benefit to limiting registry direct sales. So they say things like the PDP should examine whether there are any any consumer protection benefit to limiting registry direct sales, and that this requirement may be actually hindering innovation and the development of new services for other registry operators, thereby reducing the benefit to consumers. And on another comment, Google encouraged the PDP to examine whether to permit closed TLDs to self-allocate all domain names, and recommended extending carve-outs granted to other brands to other TLDs that qualify for a code of conduct exemption. So this is looking at getting rid of the registrar completely. And we're very short on time, but INTA stated that it does not support dispensing with the code of conduct requirements altogether, but there are maybe justification for permitting registries to seek an exemption to the specification code of nine on a case-by-case basis. So kind of a where we are today type of approach. And then on the last page, ALAC supported retaining non-discrimination rule even if it does cause inefficiencies. And John Poole opposed vertical integration, saying that registry operators should not be allowed to operate registrars. Now, given that we have 1 minute on this, I just want to quickly ask if anyone has any input on probably the topic of whether or not we're asking ourselves if is this code of conduct exempt registries and specification 13 not brands should be required to either use a registrar or not. Does anyone have any input on that? We could probably go 30 seconds over, but Susan's typing, and I'm hoping it's going to be. Oh, just drop off. Okay. Sophia, go ahead.
Hi, this is Sophia. Just speaking out of my personal opinion. So I second the comments about the dot brand TLDs. Whether it seems not very efficient for them to have. To have registrar to register domains if they're only registered domains for their internal use. For some of the brand applicants and users in Asia Pacific, especially in China, I think their confusion is this is not really efficient. Also, quite a lot of other expenses have to put into require a registrar. Would they only want to register domains, maybe two or three of them just for internal usage? And also, for the brand is quite simple and it's nothing to, for them, the registered domain is nothing to do with public interest. It's strictly for them own usage. So I think that question is universal. Across the brand owners and the brand applicants, that we should probably take into consideration whether really a full integration could be possible for the brand TLDs. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you, Sophia. And in my personal capacity, I can agree with you on that. But noting that we are at the top of the hour and I've dragged this call on as long as I could, I'm going to summarize it with, I'm going to end it with that, and that Jeff makes a good suggestion on vertically integrated entities, some of these questions once we get that list from ICANN compliance. So, next action item is staff. We'll work with staff to get those off ICANN compliance. So, with that, everyone, I hope you have a great, week, and for those of us in the U.S. and us expats living around the world, happy Thanksgiving, and I hope you have a good turkey or ham or pork if you're like me. All right. Well, thank you very much, and have a great week.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thanks, everyone, for joining. You can disconnect your line. Have a good rest of the day.